Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
Today, we're going to talk about how post-traumatic growth transforms us. And because I have my voice back, Haley and Jen are going to let me introduce today.
We couldn't stop you. Well, I guess where would be a good place to start with transformation? Where do you guys think would be a good starting point?
One of the things that happens and is very grounded in trauma work is that we work with people who've experienced trauma to move into their window of tolerance, right? So we talked before about how when you have a trauma and crisis, you then go into this place where you start to understand where you can feel emotion. So instead of being stuck in fight, flight, freeze, fawn, or being stuck in disconnected, dissociated patterns, we want you to be able to fully feel and experience life. And there's multiple ways we've talked about before of that happening. Once you find your window of tolerance, the transformation part is about learning to choose to widen it. And we do that through either the act of self-love and compassion and learning to sit with those emotions that are uncomfortable and create more ability to tolerate discomfort. So when we get to a place where our trauma and our symptoms of trauma keep us seeking comfort rather than growth, then we get stuck in these self-sabotaging cycles. And that leads to a lack of transformation. In fact, normally we see people's, instead of their experiences broaden and widen, we see them reduce and they have less experience. And that goes into those different aspects of the five areas of post-traumatic growth, right? So the one we're talking about today is really under the idea of personal strength and how do we increase personal strength after trauma.
Sometimes just the stress and the trauma itself creates more resilience in ourselves, the ability to weather stress, not have our feathers be ruffled, as it were. It doesn't quite rock the boat of our lives. Whereas before trauma, a similar setback would really cause us to have a bad day, a bad week, a bad month. Whereas after the trauma, it seems like a really small thing by comparison. And so it doesn't really seem to bother us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a good example of as we widen that window of tolerance, we create resilience, which is a sign of increased strength. And through that, we can have more experiences and we can move into especially this idea of experiencing ourselves.
What I do want to focus, though, real quick, before we say widening the window of tolerance, what I want to mention is the fact of just because we feel like, well, compared to what I had before, this isn't a big deal. This is when it's a really good time to be checking in with self and reevaluating. And this is really a great time when you have a second party, like a therapist or something like that, to talk through, because those are often people who can tell you like, hey, just because it's not as bad as this doesn't mean it's not a big deal, right? So let's also just discuss there's a difference between widening a window of tolerance and being dissociative of your emotions and trying to belittle what's going on.
That reminds me of, I forgot the hiker's name. His story was turned into the movie 127 Hours. He was hiking solo through southern Utah. He got stuck between a boulder and a cliff in a slot canyon.
He had to cut his arm off.
Yeah, he had to cut his arm off in order to escape, and with a very dull pocket knife. Anyway, so he gets out, incredibly dehydrated, hasn't eaten for days. And the family gives him like the small fun-sized pack of Oreos and like half a bottle of water. Like that's all they had. And one of this family of three, I think it was, runs to cell service, calls in a helicopter to life flight him out. And he hesitates to get in the helicopter. He's like, I don't want to get blood on your seats. Like, all right. So that's what we're for. And also, how is your pain? Mm-hmm. He's like, oh. It's like a three, because
comparatively
compared to what the pain was experienced while cutting off his own arm.
Or even sitting with a boulder on his arm.
Right. Yeah. It was.
I was going to say, having a boulder sitting on your arm, the initial pain of that could feel like, you know, cutting your arm off might feel like nothing compared to that. Right.
Yeah. And so it's sometimes, I hesitate to use this word, but I think it fits, dangerous sometimes to minimize things that really need to go on, like in the case of this gentleman. And it's going to, after we're done with this podcast, I'm going to remember his name.
You're good.
In my case, I'm in pain all the time, like we talked about on the podcast. I'm incapable of registering brain freezes. And so it's not that I need to ignore what my body is telling me. It's just that sometimes it, comparatively, it doesn't register. And so, like you're saying, Haley, it's important that we don't just, oh, Aaron Ralston, thank you. Haley just looks it up for me. That was the name of the hiker. It's not that something is no longer a big deal. A trauma will still be a trauma after our window of tolerance has increased or we've become more resilient. Sometimes when people have had an incredibly traumatic life, they'd be like, oh, I was in a car crash, no big deal. Or, you know, my entire family died, no big deal. Like, no, it's still a big deal and we need to address it.
And so when we're talking about opening a window of tolerance and making it bigger, we're not stating that we're making other things that have happened smaller. What we're stating is simply the idea of, just like any human being with growth, you know, we talk about window of tolerance. We talk about, you know, when are we going to need to move up to the next stage? Think of a little kid with clothing. Hey, you are going to have that little kid start. The clothing's going to be baggy. They're going to grow into it. It's going to fit great. And then all of a sudden they wake up one morning and they've grown again. And now all of a sudden we have to look and see, okay, they've outgrown what they have. We need to go into the next size up. And that's a healthy growth aspect. We all go through it in different ways, whether it be we're learning piano when we go from one level to the next, whether it be that I'm, you know, learning how to lift weights and I go from one weight level to another, right? There's a window of tolerance is always being pushed in all areas of our life. Okay. Even something as simple as like eating spicy food. Sometimes you start with something small and then all of a sudden you realize your window of tolerance gets bigger. But what we're talking about, especially when it comes to post-trauma, is there's a difference between a growth of window of tolerance and being unable to register that what happened and being in a place where maybe I'm not in a place where I can register like, okay, this was a big deal. And it doesn't mean that now I can just outgrow this and this won't be a big deal compared to the next situation. We need to make sure that there's a healthy balance going on of able to say like a traumatic event versus a growing event. Yes, technically a traumatic event is a growing event, but not all growing events are trauma events. Okay. So you need to register what it is and what's affecting the window of tolerance.
And I actually, one of the things I love that you talked about is that analogy of the kid growing out of their clothes, right? So one of the things that keeps us from transforming into a growth mindset versus a negative and stuck mindset or into self-sabotage is when we don't recognize that we're having to learn to tolerate new things. So for example, if your clothes are too small and you can feel that and you can be like, this is uncomfortable, some people will say, oh, I need to do something about that, that I'm uncomfortable, but I want to be comfortable. So I'm going to grow and learn and develop into this new size or this new ability in my life, a new relationship, style, more boundaries, those kinds of things, versus saying, nope, I'm going to stay in this onesie. And this is the onesie I'm going to wear the rest of my life because every other onesie feels unsafe. Those are the parts that self-sabotage us and keep us from growing.
I'd like to mention what happens sometimes when we're still in the trauma or if we don't grow after the trauma. It's called destructive entitlement. And I don't love the name for it because destruction and entitlement have very separate terms. And so we think that if someone's in trauma or they haven't grown as a result, that automatically means that they must have some kind of entitlement that's destructive. That's not what the term means. So it's really hard to kind of hop out of the definition that must jump to all of our minds hearing that. What it really means. Okay, so destructive entitlement is that we are in so much pain or we've experienced so much pain that we are incapable of registering other people's pain. It doesn't have to do with the word entitlement. That's why I don't like the term destructive entitlement.
Say that again. Say the definition again.
That we have been through so much pain in our life, or we are currently in so much pain, that we are incapable of registering someone else's pain, or that we don't care about someone else's pain. So if you're at a carnival or an amusement park and you have those signs before you get on the roller coaster that says you must be this tall to ride, it's kind of like everyone's pain is that you must have pain this big to register for me. And then above that, your pain must be so much bigger in order for me to care. And then it must be so much bigger above that for me to do something about it.
So is the destructive part of that I can't
connect? Again, that's we gotta divorce what destructive generally means in our vocabulary and entitlement. That's why I don't like the term destructive entitlement, but that's what the term destructive entitlement means, is that I'm incapable of seeing your pain because of my pain. This is a term that was made several decades ago. So just throw out what you usually think destructive and entitlement means and think of it as a whole new word that just happens to sound like destructive and entitlement. So imagine, like, if I said, so blue goose, and you're automatically thinking of a bird that looks like a goose that is blue. And like, no, that actually means a Hyundai or a vodka. Yeah, that's what we're talking about here. Okay. Has okay. nothing to yeah. do with destruction or entitlement. It's lost to the sands of time because it was just created in the 60s. No one was alive back then.
Oh, it was created in the 60s. You should have started with that. I should have known it was vodka.
I really like the theory. It comes from contextual therapy. I just really hate the name because I got hung up on it for a long time. It has nothing to do with destruction. It has nothing to do with entitlement, other than
it does sound like comparative suffering a little bit.
There is some comparative suffering, absolutely, that's tied up in there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me, is this idea of comparative suffering. But to this point where I can't register you if you don't meet this minimum.
Yeah, this is something that happens with older generations all the time, that what you're complaining about isn't important because I had it so much harder growing up. And so what happens is there's this complete void or absence of empathy. And when there's no empathy, there's no use for compassion. And so when someone's going through trauma, or they don't grow after the trauma, we see this destructive entitlement of, oh yeah, well, I went through this. And even if they're not comparing, it will just automatically happen because there's this filter, kind of like wearing ski goggles that color everything orange, that you'll just miss it because it gets caught in the lens.
So it does sound like that goes under the idea of self-sabotage in the growth model. And it's interesting because they talk about self-sabotage as a part of ourselves that we're ignoring. And when we ignore those parts of ourselves that processed experience, and I think it sounds like what you and Haley were saying about, now we suddenly don't give normal range of emotion attention, that leads to self-sabotage and a lack of transformation in growth, in post-traumatic growth.
Yeah, I think destructive entitlement definitely leads to self-sabotage because it distances relationships from us. It's, you can't connect without empathy and compassion. I'm curious what you two think about the active or passive elements of self-sabotage.
I think it does relate in some ways, because people, as they're growing and they're not currently in their crisis and they've learned skills. So this would be a time where we've seen clients who they're making gains, they're moving forward, they're safe, and we're seeing that. And then what happens is there's some type of inner conflict, right? So self-sabotage is always about an inner conflict that we're experiencing, whether it's passive or active. And it has to do with parts, which is, we talk a lot about parts work, but this idea that one part is not being paid attention to, not being acknowledged, and therefore it will hijack the system. And that's what leads to self-sabotage.
Well, I wonder if instead of boundaries next, we do parts. Anyway, sorry, that's a separate topic.
But it actually, in the work, it talks about those exile parts, which are the parts that hold deep, painful emotion, that when they are not attended to and you don't do your therapy work with them, and it's not just about managing and coping past trauma, and it's actually about feeling and healing those emotions, that we are more likely to self-sabotage than lead to growth.
This is a really big box we just opened. We're going to dip our toe in and address this in later episodes. We haven't said that for a while. So parts are essentially like everyone is a bus and we all have passengers on our bus. And so like I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I'm a therapist, I'm a son, I'm a brother. And it would be inappropriate for me to be a therapist with my wife or a son with my wife or a husband with clients. And so it's important that we have these different parts of our lives. We want to make sure that the right part is driving the bus at the right time. Parts of these exiles that Jen is talking about are these, we all have this really vulnerable part of ourselves that we try to protect, or that these other parts of ourselves try to protect. I think we talked a little bit about this in our attachment episodes, of how some people just really struggle with calm, peaceful times.
Right. And if we understand that if we don't understand who's on the bus and what their needs are going into different situations, then they can't all go in and be successful together. And sometimes those parts that aren't ready to widen the window of tolerance and grow will keep us stuck or move us into sabotage.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you brought the parts in, because when it comes to post-traumatic growth, we're talking about these like five different areas that like show, you know, there's been post-traumatic growth. You know, I think we've already gone through it, but like appreciation of life, relationship with others, new possibilities, personal strength, spiritual change, all of these things can often be brought about because of different parts that come out when, and in more extreme cases, a part may come out to help us deal with a scenario. But in everyday human being lingo, we have these parts that help us just kind of remind us about different aspects of these different things. And so I'm glad you brought it up, because I think it's good to notice that with post-traumatic growth, we may then become more aware of a part that we hadn't really known before. Like there's totally, for me, just self-disclosure, I don't have a big dissociation diagnosis or anything like that. So when I talk about my parts, these are just normal human everyday parts that everyone kind of has their own versions of this. And so with me, I'll notice, like, you know, going through different things, I kind of have the same thing with Taylor, of like, there's a therapist part, there's a, you know, person in a relationship part, there's a, you know, friendship part, there's, you know, big sister, little sister, you know, whatever's going on. But there's definitely some parts that, especially after like post-traumatic growth, especially like for me, I mean, I'm pretty open, like I've also had relationship trauma, things like that. There's definitely parts of that, like girlfriend part, or parts of potential, you know, just partner in general parts that have evolved and changed and have helped with that growth aspect, and have made me aware about issues that had happened, or issues that could happen, or issues I'm worried are happening. Those parts definitely, like, I can notice that those parts can make me more aware of those scenarios and help me go towards that growth mindset more. So it's good you mentioned that, because I think those play a big part. We're going to say parts way too much in this segment. It plays a big role in helping an individual know how to specifically support each of those different drivers in the bus, in how they want to go about going towards a journey of lasting change.
One of the things that, as we're connecting all of these different topics back to the idea of transformation, if we understand that the parts themselves need a chance to heal, and I will say my caveat asterisk here is that is best done with a therapist and not just an individual work. But as those parts heal, that they can transform, and it's very possible for them to move into helping you with those areas of growth that Haley talked about earlier, including one that I see a lot of clients want, which is improving relationships. right? But if we ignore the parts of us that have been hurt in relationships, we're going to struggle then with engaging in healthy attachment. And so, especially in attachment work, I see this need to move into a lot of self-compassion. Of course, I feel this way about a relationship because old relationships looked this way. And so I have to heal and accept that and therefore widen the window of tolerance for what I can deal with in the relationship and that I can stay present versus go into the hyper arousal or the hypo arousal. I can stay present and make very wise decisions about the relationship versus go back into routine and patterns that my trauma taught me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
I think one of the things that I want to make sure that we talk about is that self-compassion work is one of the most important parts of parts work.
Mm-hmm.
And because when we have trauma that becomes difficult because we've been mistreated, that's one of the reasons that it's important to go to a therapist and start to recognize and gain awareness of where you can increase self-compassion, that you can increase working in a place that allows for your system to feel safe. Your bus to feel safe, as Taylor was talking about.
Yeah, you don't want parts hijacking your bus, but we'll get into more parts stuff down the road.
Yeah, and it's interesting, and I won't go into it, but this idea, when we do parts work, we also need to talk about the inner critic, because the inner critic is a big part of what can help us move through transformation or lead into self-sabotage. But we'll save that for a spoiler for the next section on parts. Well, for a future section on parts.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We'd love to hear from you.